tell my inner child I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.
Hey, you guys, this is the second episode of Talks with Two. Today, I got Mr. Daniel Westbrooks as a guest today. My special guest, born and raised from Nashville, Tennessee. How you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. It's How you
doing? I'm doing good. It's early.
Is it early or late?
Early.
I get up at 4 in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Every morning.
Not your case early.
Yeah. We're almost halfway through the day.
I'm excited to hear your story today.
Let's go.
All right. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and being raised in Nashville, Tennessee?
All right. So again, my name is Daniel Westbrooks from East Nashville, out east, however you want to say it. I grew up two-parent household, me and my brothers. Kind of got into some little trouble when I was young. Ended up going to prison when I was 17, 18 years old, about 10 years. Got out, got back into some more trouble. Got out from that right there when I really decided to like start changing my life. Transitioning from being a street dude to, you know, a more, qualified civilian. Yes.
Can you share some pivotal moments from your childhood in Nashville that shaped your resilience?
I think one of the toughest situations I ever dealt with was being sexually molested from the time I was 5 years old to about 9, 10 years old, which took me through some of my darkest times of my life, which actually helped develop to the character and the person that I am today, develop my character into who I am today, man.
So, and you said from what ages that was again?
About 5 to 9, 10 years old, somewhere around
five to nine to ten. I also experienced that myself, and it was with the same gender. So may I ask, like, was it male or female?
For sure. It was male, same gender.
Male.
Yeah.
See, most people think that it can't happen like that. Like, it always got to be opposite gender.
Nah. It's definitely still going on to this day. I deal with a lot of clients that experience the same situation.
Right. So how was that for you, experiencing that at such a young age, like 5 years old?
Then it was scary.
Right.
You know, you got a person that you look up to, kind of one of your heroes. Like, I never reveal this person's identity.
Right.
Because I'm not one to, like, bash somebody, and I don't want everybody else to look at this person based off of what they did to me.
Right.
I'm not forgiving them for it. But, it was terrifying. I felt betrayed. You know what I'm saying? It was just one of those situations, like, you don't really know what to do. And I ain't never really speak about it. And so my parents didn't know, but my baby brother, the one that discovered what happened one night and told my mama, and that's how it came to the light. So
right. So how was that reaction when your mom had found out?
Man, honestly, I'm not even going to lie. That time period of my life is like such a blur. You know,
you can't really, like, can't really remember it.
Yeah, it'd be times like I might have a dream about something and it takes me back to that period of my life. But as far as how everything went, I don't know. Because I just remember being a happy child until, you know, everything started coming out. My grades started slipping.
Right.
I didn't really want to play ball no more. And I became depressed.
Right.
Yeah, and I actually tried to kill myself. Took like a bunch of pills my 7th grade year. Luckily, there was some bullshit pills, but it was like some little Advil or BC or something.
So what resources or support systems did you have during this time, like during that time of you really just realizing what had happened to you?
My parents, for one, like the support that they was giving me, you know what I'm saying, remove this person out of my life. I think they got locked up for a while. And just trying to give me counseling, therapy, and different social groups to be a part of.
Right. And when you say that person got locked up, was it because of what they had did to you?
Yeah.
Okay. As far as, like, justice getting served, do you feel like you got justice? Because it's a lot of people, you know, the predator is still out there, like, for me, for instance. So how did that make you feel that your parents took the right steps to protect you after they found out?
Back then, it really didn't mean too much or nothing for real. I think I got my justice 2017. I started telling my story and I went on National Public Radio. They did an article on me. And I guess this person seen it. And so I was working at Penn's Mechanical because I do electrical work too. Mm-hmm. Well, I did do electrical work. I don't do that no more. But I was working there and I got a text about, it was close to the end of the day, about 1:30, 2 o'clock. And they just was like, man, I'm sorry for everything I put you through. And I think right. that's what I've been missing like all these years, just an apology.
An apology.
Yeah.
So basically just getting closure, like, you know, I want to hear this from you because that affected you, I'm sure, mentally, emotionally. How did that affect your relationships?
I think it turned me to a savage because, I mean, like, by the same gender and uh-huh. having it to you, like,
right.
you, I'm not, I know I'm not gay, you know what I'm
right.
saying? Nothing against, I love everybody, you know what
right.
I'm saying? Like, wherever your heart attracts you to, whatever your heart attracts you to, go that way. But for me, that's just not my thing. But I felt shameful for a while because I felt like everybody knew what had happened to me and for it to happen by a person that looked like me with everything that I have.
Right.
It was like, nah, I got something to prove. Like, you know, I love women, but it was like, I got to love them even more. Like, that song
yeah.
Wayne them dropped, I want to crush every girl in the world. It was like one of them things. Like, I just, you know what?
Right. So speaking on the suicide attempts, what strategies did you find that was most effective in your recovery that helped the most, like outside of speaking about your story?
Well, the speaking didn't even come till 20 some years later. I just really got into speaking when I was 32. I'd be 39 in March.
Right.
And so when I started messing with Karen then.
Miss Kara, shout out to Miss Kara. Shout out to the
Ms.
Fine Design, man.
Fine Design. Yeah, that came about, I want to say 2018. And I was, I think it was John Early. And it was, we had a group of guys, kids. They were like first grade to fifth or sixth grade. And mm-hmm. I was just in the cafeteria. Didn't really know what I was going to talk about for real. And just seeing them acting out and what you would call bad, because I don't call no kid bad, but,
right.
you know, just showing out, right? And it just put me back in that second grade mind frame, like,
mm-hmm.
I wonder what they're going through to
right.
be acting out like this. And so when I got up to speak, that was one of the first things I talked about, what had happened to me. And
what happened?
At the end of it, like, I had teachers coming up to me talking about, like, they experienced the same thing and
right.
they had a kid that had been like all the way penetrated because I've never been penetrated by another man. It was just like little acts.
Right.
You know,
little sexual
saying?
Acts. It's crazy because I can relate to you in such a personal level as far as going to the youth. John Early was my first school that
yeah.
I went to talk to recently and it was me sharing my story and I got the same reaction that you had got.
Yeah.
So let's take it back to when you were in prison. Name, like, what was the reason you was in prison?
I had a couple robbers.
Couple robbers and
aggravated assault.
Aggravated assault. So how did your time in prison affect your mental health?
They say it take about 30 days to become institutionalized. So you take... back then, I was for real, like, game-banging heavy. I knew I was doing time, but, you know, at that age, 17, 18 years old, you're not really looking at it as doing time because I don't know, for some reason, for black people, we think going to prison is a rite to passage.
Nah.
So it was like, well, I'm about to get out. When I come home, I'm going to be the big homie. I'm going to be OG when I get out. So it was, you know, you got times where you lonely and going through, you know, those withdrawals from being home and being around your family.
Right.
But, for the most part, it's every day you finding something new to do to get through the day.
And you had a lot of time. You say you was in there 10 years?
Yeah, roughly 10.
Okay, so for the gang affiliation, what happened that made you want to live that life, that choose that route? Like, what got you into the robbing? And
well, the robbing didn't have nothing to do with the gang banging.
That was just
something that, you know, you broke running around with
right.
money and it's quick and it was easy to do. But as far as like the game bang and stuff, man, I think when I was like 14 and 15 years old, I ran into ran into a guy, man. I just saw like the kind of power he had and the leadership and the people you had following behind you and like how they stuck together.
Right.
And I liked it. And so that's what led me to want to be what he was. Because obviously he was older than me, about 10, 15 years older than me. Mm. And we met. I kicked somebody's door in at Clarksville. I can talk about it now. And so it was me and three other people, and I'm not going to say their names.
Right.
But I played my part in it, and we came back with a lot of guns, some money, and I was selling guns, and that's how I met him.
Right.
And so he was... he was rapping and stuff, and they'd be like, come on, come to the show with us. And they'd be like 20, 25 deep. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, like I want to be a part of something like this.
Right. So you seen the way that they moved. You seen the, you know, the benefits they was getting. So how did you feel about the money that you was getting? Like
back then, it really wasn't no real money.
It wasn't no real money?
Nah, like back then when you thought you had, when $1,000 was rich.
And now, so
my goal
know.
Is to be like, let me get $1,000 and I'm rich. And then it'd be gone in 2 hours. Catch a bus to Hickory Hollow Mall. You blowing it on a pair of shoes and outfit.
Right. So I know most people when they're in jail, you know, how was the family dynamics? Like, did you have a support system? Because I know most people that go to jail, sometimes they feel alone. Like, the same people that they was rocking with when they was outside of jail, you know, they might not be hitting them up no more, might not put no money on the books. Like, it's a whole different thing. So how was that for you?
I ain't even gonna lie. When you asked me just a minute ago how was being locked up for all that time, and I said it felt like I wasn't because I had a hell of a support system.
Right.
My mama, my daddy. My little brother.
Eating good.
Yeah, he was playing college ball at the time. Well, he had about, I think, I got locked up his freshman year of high school. So after he finished high school, he went to college playing ball and stuff. So, but yeah, like my brothers, my mama, my daddy, my homegirl, Misty, man, she ran into my mom like 4 or 5 months into when I even started the bid.
Right.
And she rocked with me the whole time.
Right.
Like writing me That's letters good. And coming to see me 3-4 hours away. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love her to death. Like, that's my girl. We went to high school together, man. And, yeah, like, it was when cell phones hit, it was, I called it fishing. I get on the chat line and I'd be calling, like, all my friends, like, hey, get the free 60-minute code for me, send it to me. So I'd be on the chat line trying to get girls to send me money and, you know what I'm saying, support my habits.
Right. Yeah, okay, so.
It was cool.
I know you said gang activity. How was that being in jail? Because I know they have gangs and stuff in jail.
Oh, for sure. Like, that's where the mecca of gangs are right now. You know what I'm saying? Inside the prisons. It was, for me, I was one of the, I'm passionate about everything that I do.
Right.
So I'm wholeheartedly gang banging, right? So it's, I'm ready to crash the ship at any given time. You know, of course, riots break out or we banging on a certain group of other gangs.
It was a different
experience. You know, you got to walk the child with one of your homeboys. You're going out to go work out. Make sure you got somebody with you. You in the showers. Like, you got to have somebody on shower detail. If you break that line while I'm en route to the shower or coming out the shower back to my cell.
Right.
Yeah, like, they going to come see about you. Like, it goes down.
I honestly feel like I wouldn't survive because I would starve. Nah. I would starve. All like, I mean, how they say jail food is, it's just this nasty, just this nasty ass shit.
Well, it's different between being in jail and being in prison.
Prison.
When
okay.
you go to prison, it's a little different. The food is a little better. If you know somebody that works in the kitchen, you could buy like little chicken patties, hamburger patties, bacon, peanut butter. You know what I'm saying? Like, anything to make it seem like you're doing something other than the normal, what they're giving you.
Right. So, I guess I really want to get into you working in a juvenile, in the justice center. So, how did that come about?
So, shout out to my big brother and mentor, Robert Sherrill and Patricia Tharp. They the one that got me started with Impact Youth Outreach. And, I went in there one day just shadowing them, and then we were supposed to meet at like 12 o'clock, and they hit me at like 11:55, like, bro, I need you to go in there and hold it down for us today. We ain't going to be able to make it, but you got it. I'm like,
nigga, what I'm supposed to do?
How? With what? Like, I don't have, I don't know. And so I went in there and, what was that? 2018. It started in 2018. And so I don't actually work for Juvenile. Like, mm-hmm. I've never worked for them. Just with the nonprofit that I'm involved with. And I did, I've worked with One Voice Nashville with Miss Mary Margaret for about 3 or 4 sessions. So it's like 8-week sessions that we go in and we work with kids with storytelling. So right. they'll pick a story, like come up with whatever happened in their life. And they want right. to put it in a poem or put it in like storytelling form or however they want to present it. And at the end of the session, we put on a showcase for everyone down at the detention center.
Ooh.
And so I did that for about a year, year and a half. And that's when I first, they start cutting a check.
At first it started as like volunteer.
Yeah, just volunteer work. Like I still do it for free. Other organizations,
like they started coming around.
Like Metro Nashville, I've been working with Global Education now, which came from me working with One Voice Nashville. And yeah, they put me on the payroll. So I don't work directly for a Juvenile Justice Center.
Your nonprofit is?
So Global Education is through Metro Arts. And they inside of schools, detention centers, and everywhere else that they are. I don't know all of it, but yeah, they reached out to me and she was just like, Miss Ellen Gilbert, that's her name. Shout out Miss Ellen Gilbert.
Shout out to her.
Yes. She was like, I know you're probably making this amount of money, but I can give you this right here, but we want to create.
Right.
They didn't even have a mentoring department or whatever for Metro Arts. Like I had to meet 2 other ladies in some coffee shop and they were like, we want to do this. Like we got to get you in here. We've been hearing about you.
Right.
How can we accommodate you to work with us, to go in there and work with these kids?
Okay.
And so that's how that came about.
So what's some things that you see in the kids, like while you're a part of these programs and getting them to share their story, like what's the characteristics of these kids when you first interact with them?
Pain. Trauma. Hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like outside of the theatrics that they may give you when you sit down and just look at them, they hurt.
Right.
Yeah. And as a human, you hurt with them. You know what I'm saying? But you understand the dynamics of their case and why they're here. Because a lot of the kids I deal with have multiple robberies, gun charges, and homicides.
Right. And what's something that, when do you start to notice change within the kids? Like, how do you know they're making progress?
It's a roller coaster with these kids, man.
Right.
Because, you know, first, the initial greeting is they showing you one side, and then
right.
you start to, the more you consistent with showing up in their lives, you start to see little differences in them,
mm-hmm.
and they change behavior, right?
Right.
But it's good, but then you see the other side because they are still incarcerated, and they are around a bunch of their peers that still, you know, they think a certain type of way, and everybody is hooked to this rap music and having sticks and taking
right.
like a deck of cards. And you know what I'm saying? Like their mentality is still this right here. You know what I'm saying? Like a poor mentality or a slum mentality. And
right.
so you see changes, but then like the best success story I've had working with a kid. The first kid I ever had to get on stand and testify and be a character witness. My guy, Chris Perez, I met him when I first started. And he told me everything he wanted to do. And he ended up getting out on probation and he's doing it. You know, just had
right.
a little girl early this year. Started his pressure washing business, won a clean cars. He's actually doing music as well.
Right.
He surprised me with that because I never knew he could rap.
Right.
But yeah, just getting out working and changing his life for the better, man. And he's done it. He stuck to it. Out of all the kids I work with. You get one out of a handful. You know what
right.
I'm saying? And he's that one.
That's good. I know. How does that make you feel that you can go in to the same room as these kids and you can share your story? Like, how important is it for you to share your story with the kids?
probably the most important part, especially when you're trying to be relatable. For me, I'm almost 40 years old. We talking about kids that's damn near 30 years younger than me that I'm working with, right? So how am I relatable to these guys? You know what I'm saying? How do I make doing the right thing cool? You know what I'm saying? Like, and deter them from wanting to be in a gang, because everybody is gang. They create their own little gangs and just think like this is the thing to do. When you really don't know the politics of gang banging or that whole culture of life, that lifestyle, man. So, but I feel good when I go in there, man, because, like, I don't get old. I feel like I never get old, right? I'm a kid. I'm a big kid at heart, for one. But being open and honest and vulnerable and transparent about my life, I've gotten over the stage of, I guess, people not being receptive to my story.
Right.
By me telling this for so long, you actually get a better response because you create like that safe space for people to open up and be vulnerable and transparent as well. So, and just like, I don't judge nobody. I let them know from the top. I don't care what you did to get here.
Right.
I don't care about that. My focus is on how we keep you from not coming back or making some of the same decisions or choices that you make. So, again, just being open and honest about everything. I don't know what entices them about prison stories. They be going to hear that shit. But I'm like, you know, sometimes I just sit back and I tell them about it, because I know some of them, a lot of them on their way to prison.
Right.
And they still got like childlike mentality. And being down in juvenile, like letting you know, like, you're going to get away with that shit down here. But
once
you go up across the bridge,
ain't
going
to be so easy on you.
Nah, it's different. And it's going to be a shock to a lot of them.
Right. So can you discuss the role of therapy in your life? Like, as far as you going in and opening up to someone else, like, what role does their therapy play in your life?
So when I was younger, I really didn't understand therapy. And then I had like a old like Arabian or Indian guy. You know what I'm saying? It's like, again, we talking about being relatable. I can't relate to nothing you talking about. Not taking anything away from his profession or his expertise. But for me, it's like, how can you tell me something or help me with something that you ain't never been through?
Right.
And so now the counselor that I see, you know, she's an African-American woman. And you know, we got some similarities and we can relate. So I think when you're trying to find a therapist or a counselor, make sure it's somebody that you can relate to. And you can have multiple counselors, but at least have one that you can relate to.
One that you hit on every time.
Yeah.
Speaking on being vulnerable, I know that sometimes men are taught that being vulnerable and showing emotion is a weakness.
Yeah, not sometimes, all the time.
Right.
Like, that's just something that you're born with. Society tells you that men have to be the strong person. Actually, crying gives you strength. You know what I'm saying? Because you're releasing a lot of dead weight. You know what I mean? So I tell people all the time, man, if I got to cry, cry. If you got to cry, cry. Let that shit out. Because you got two different type of tears. You got tears of joy and you got tears of pain. The tears of pain gonna give you the little white streak that come down your face.
Right.
And that's like salt, built up salt, pressure and stress, why a lot of black people dying now, because they got a lot of it built up and they not releasing it.
Right. So they basically just holding it in until one day
it just explode.
It come out the wrong way, when you could have just took the steps to release a little bit at a time. Like, even if they're not that comfortable with releasing everything, but just taking the steps. The first step is progress.
For sure. Like, just making that, taking that initiative to want help, you know, ask for help, and not worrying about what nobody cares. Like me, an old school dude told me a long time ago, bro, you got to insert your fuck it chip. And I was like, huh? She was like, yeah, your fuck it chip. Like, well, you just don't give a fuck about people or what they saying, what they doing, or how they view you, none of that. Like, focus on you. Fuck what everybody else think. Like, do you, what works for you. You know what I'm saying?
And, right, and that's the truth, because at the end of the day, all you're going to have is you, and like, yourself depend on it. Because I've been out here telling my story. You know, I went through sexual assault. I got shot twice in both of my legs last year.
Damn.
Being an innocent bystander at a video shoot. I do music. I'm a music producer, engineer. So I've been going around telling my story, and that's the best thing that I could have ever did. Yeah. Me releasing my song, Inner Child, speaking about it, it got people wanting to talk about it.
Yeah, nah, that's dope, though, because I checked you out, too, though. And I told you, like, it take a lot of nuts to give yourself to the world in your most vulnerable, in the most vulnerable way that you can. You know what I'm saying?
And that, speaking to the youth, is a lane that I never realized that I needed to get in until I went through that situation. So I feel like sometimes we go through things and have difficult moments to be in another path where we might be inspiring a lot of people. We taking what we went through, telling the kids, and hopefully navigating them through their problems that they don't talk about.
Yeah, I think it's kind of selfish sometimes, like for us as the older generation, to have went through certain things.
Right.
And not come back and help somebody that might need it. And you don't never know who you need until you open your mouth.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we go right now to a school and we both get on stage. You're going to say some stuff that's going to gain the attention of some of these kids, and I'm going to say something too. Right.
Right.
But they need it, both of us.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, because you got something to offer them that I don't have, and vice versa. You see what I'm saying? So it's like kind of our responsibility to get out here and do this type of stuff because they need it. We didn't have that.
Right. And I feel like them going to the schools, they go through so much outside of school. At home, like, Inner Child was me realizing I need to heal my inner child. Like, this is where it starts. It starts from how you raised. It starts from, you know, my mom, you know, didn't believe me when my situation had happened. So that was a whole different ball game mentally for me.
Yeah.
But your parents supported.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel like it's important for these kids to really just know that they're not alone. Like, they need a mentor. They need to reach out to the school counselors. It's people out here that do really care for them. How do you connect with the kids and gain their trust?
Again, just being open, honest, transparent about everything. And, I don't pacify these little niggas either. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to talk to you straight up. Like, I'm going to meet you where you at. You feel me? Like, I ain't coming in. I'm not a preacher. I'm not, you feel me? Like, sometimes it get heated. You know what I'm saying? But, I'm going to give you the real, raw, authentic version of myself.
Right.
Like, I'm not changing who I am for nothing, because that's when it's fake. That's when you're not going to get the real outcome that you're looking for out of these kids.
Right.
No, like I done went in the cell with some of these little niggas. Like, all right, you gonna disrespect me while I'm talking? Nigga, hey, bro, pop the dough. And bring your little homie in here too, since he riding with you, nigga. And
get him straight.
We get there. It goes there, you feel me? But
they need that.
Yeah, I try to be the person that I wish I would have had when I was a child.
Right.
That's it. Just
and you see how much that's helping, though, because now you're the person that somebody never had.
Yeah.
You know, what advice would you give to someone currently struggling with trauma, mental health issues based on your own experiences?
Talk about it.
Right.
Find somebody that, you know, you're comfortable with, that you can open up to, and talk about it. Release it. And if you had somebody to victimize you or cause you this pain, forgive them first. You know, make sure you forgive them and you're not living with that that weight on you. And have a pure heart. And then write them a letter. I tell my clients all the time, write them a letter. Not necessarily saying that you have to give them this letter, but write them a letter
to
and
release.
Express how you really feel. You know, just a heartfelt letter that you want to express everything that they've done to you, and you know, get it out of you some kind of way. Whether talking about it, write it down, however you gotta let it go. Let it go, and don't let it consume you or overwhelm you or ruin your life.
Right. I feel like that's good advice. I wish I had that advice, because my mom, she my main trigger. It's times I came to my mom, but she didn't react a certain way that I wanted her to react. So fast forward now, it's like, I'm just get this out for me. I can't worry about you. I need to release this for me. And that's what I did with Inner Child. So I definitely feel like that's good advice to give.
And hold on, before we go to the, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. You good.
We have a, and I just learned about this too, maybe the, over the past 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
You have to teach some people support.
Right.
Because they don't know how to support you. And in your mind, you like, I want you to be doing this, doing that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know to do this because
they
haven't been through anything like this, or they might be afraid to how it'll look to their peers. Like your mom, I don't even want to use your mom for example. Let's right. say my auntie, and mm-hmm. something happened to my cousin, and in order to save her face on how she looked to her friends or church members or something like that, we just gonna act like this never happened, or we gonna brush it off or play it light with my child because I don't want the outside to view me a certain type of way.
Right.
And we got to stop doing that shit.
Me, as a person, like I spoke on it. It could, you like, yes, I went through this, mom, and you know, you didn't hear me, but I can't judge you because although I was hurt from this situation, I can't judge you because I don't know your story. Like I mentioned in my podcast, that's my episode that's about to drop. I don't know how my mom was raised. I don't know what she went through. What if she went through the same thing, sexual assault, and she came to her parents and, you know, that generation known for sweeping things under the rug.
Facts.
So how would she be able to handle this situation? She might not be able to.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what we got to realize. That's what I had to realize because I held on to it so long when it came to my mom. But whole time, it's like, we all go through something. It's just how we was raised. Like, I don't even know how I would be if I'm a parent.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
Like, I don't know how I'm going to be if I'm a parent. Do you have kids?
Two.
How is that?
It's fun. It's challenging. They keep me on my toes. But I was scared to be a parent.
Right.
I was definitely scared. And now I have two. I don't want no more, but like I'm grateful for those two because they kind of saved me.
How old are they?
2 and 6.
Ooh.
They still babies.
Young.
But we got one that thinks she's running everything. Think everything belongs to her. And the other one, she's just a little princess. Just a
right.
evil child. But they both smart as hell, man. Like, you're like, damn, these little kids I created, like, they smart. They know more than me. They asking Alexa 1,000 things an hour and getting answers. Then come ask me, hey, Dad, what's 100 plus 2,085 plus so whatever? And
I don't know
the answer off top. I'm smarter than you. It's such and such. I'm like, yeah, baby, you smarter than me.
Man, they got to be a beautiful thing raising two girls
in
this society. I feel like the youth ages, that's the most vital points. Like, I was 8 going through this sexual assault. And like I said, it was same gender. So now I'm thinking, is this the reason I like females?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and I'm seeing my mom in this marriage. And it happened to me, too, with him. And I'm just like, this is why I don't like dudes. You know, because I'm seeing so things that we see as a kid, things that we go through as a kid could affect us a lot growing up.
It's not cool. It does affect you. You know what I'm saying? Because between the ages 1 to 5, 5 to 10, you like developing
right
into who you're gonna become. And so the things that you learn or you taught or stuff that you go through, because a lot of our trauma stems from our childhood.
Right.
And so just depending on how you deal with whatever the situation is and your perspective on it, like, you know, you got parents that are alcoholics and you got some kids that'll never drink or do drugs, and then you got some that'll turn to drugs because if mama and daddy doing it, it's cool, it's right. Who are you to tell me it's wrong to
right.
drink alcohol or mm-hmm. smoke weed or anything harder than that? You know what I'm saying? Like my kids, I have to watch how I talk my language and yelling and fussing and stuff like that because they pick up on it. When they get mad, guess what they're going to do? They're going to start yelling and start cussing because, well, daddy was doing it.
Right.
This is how I'm supposed to react to it when I get mad. When these feelings hit me, all right, this feeling right here, I should smile. This feeling right here, I should frown.
Right.
I should mug. You know what I'm saying? I should have an attitude. I should start cussing and yelling and screaming.
Right.
Because I see mom and daddy doing it. So it's, you learn all this stuff at an early age. And so it just depends on how you take the situation.
Right.
You know, it.
And I want to go back and hit on, so you and Jelly Roll work together. What's the work that you guys do?
So Jelly Roll became attached to Impact Youth Outreach. That was through Robert Sherrill.
Mm-hmm.
I've met him a few times. We've been down to Juvenile. We did Christmas this year and last year. We did, I think it was Cracker Barrel. We did two different dinners with him. I can't remember what it was, but I haven't worked like directly with Jelly Roll. Like, we don't really have a relationship like mm-hmm. that. Not saying it's not going to get to that, right. But, he busy doing what he do. I'm doing what I do. But when it's time for, like, a beneficial cause for these kids, he's showing up. I know he had reached out when MGK came to town, and we end up meeting all down there and going to go take MGK inside there to fool with them kids and talk to them for a little bit. But, like, I don't really have a relationship with Jelly Roll like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, we've done some silent auctions. We actually got another silent auction coming up. So I probably see him, I think, September, October, something like that.
Right.
So, yeah.
So as far as your future vision, like, what's something that you plan for the future for your programs? I know you have a Success Upon Reentry.
Yeah. So that's with Dream Initiative, also with Robert Sherrill and mm-hmm. Patricia Tharp. And so instead of the Dream and Impact Youth is with juveniles. Dream Initiative is we go inside the prisons and we teach okay. the curriculum on finances and budgeting and reentry. Just, you know, help if you have never done a resume, showing you how to build your resume, or to something as simple as finding a job.
Right.
You know, just all things, any kind of tool or resource that we can help or offer to these guys, man, we going in. Helping with it, so when they do get released from prison, they won't be so far behind. You know what I'm saying? Kind of feel like they up to speed on what's going on and be prepared to come out, because it could be scary upon your release.
Right.
You don't have nowhere to turn. You don't know who to call.
Right.
Or what to do. You like, damn, all right. I just spent all this time in prison, but they didn't offer me any kind of services.
Any kind of help
or rehabilitation
back together.
For when I do get out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They just use this crime I committed 10, 20 years ago against me for when I try to get back into society.
Right, so as far as being a felon and yeah. stuff like that.
So we really just trying to bridge that gap in between incarceration and just having a failed release. So when
right.
you come home, like, I want to make sure you're prepared at least to get the ball rolling.
And in that, let's say when these guys do get out, are all of them level-headed and completely go through that process and taking the steps through the reentry program? Or some of them, you know, go back out, do the same thing?
Yeah, you got some people that's going to get it, some people that's not.
Right.
You know, but then you got to think, you got everybody's situation is different.
Right.
You know, you might got a guy that's been locked up 7 or 8 years with 5 or 6 kids and, you know, going to go make $18 just ain't enough for them. And they don't have that patience to, you know, see the plan all the way through. It's like, nah, I'm back now. I got to make this happen. Like, I tried it this way right here. It's not bringing me enough money that I need. And, you know, versus somebody that went in and come out like me with no kids. You know, right. I probably got a high tolerance for sacrificing and suffering a little bit longer because I don't really have no real responsibilities outside of myself.
Right. So I can see how that can be a little easier on you versus somebody that coming out with a whole lot going on.
Gang of kids, and, you know, more responsibility than I have. You know what I'm
right.
saying? You're going to be, the urgency is going to be a little different to get it. Like, I can sit back and see this thing all the way through. Versus, you know, we got back to school shopping. We got
right.
dentist appointments and hair appointments. And they right. need clothes. They need toothpaste. They need just the basic necessities of life. With one child, it's probably $400-$500 a month. These little niggas expensive.
When was that time you were in prison that you was like, I don't want to come back and do this?
Shit, every day.
Because 10 years is 10 years is a lot.
I'm still in there. Like, I don't ever want to do this again. But then, you know, you get through that stretch. Because I went to prison twice.
So was it 10 years all at one time?
No, so it was like 8 and then like 18, 19 months the second time.
Okay.
But they was, I got out 2011 in May. I went back in July 2012.
Right.
So I was out for about 13 months. But I was on the run for 11 of those months.
So you was running.
I caught a case a month after I got out. Right. Retarded.
So what would you say, I mean, I know everybody else, everybody makes their own choices, but would you say it was the environment that you was in and the people that you were around? Or like, what would you say played a part?
I guess the people I were around. You know, I got out again. Like, my support has always been, right. I don't know. I probably one of the blessed ones, I guess, to say. I receive a lot of good support, you know, whether it be in a negative way or a positive way, but the support is always real. And so when I came home, like, everybody was giving me money, taking me shopping, taking me to the club, paying for shit, you know what I'm saying? And after about
you look like a celebrity.
That, it was like, man, fuck this. I need my own bread. Like, I can't say, hey, girl, you want something to drink? Hey, bro, buy her a drink. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't do that. So, damn, got caught up. But yeah, so it was just a mixture of that and me wanting to, I wanted some real money. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, you leave as a child, you come home, you're a grown man now. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I ain't even look the same. Had a beard, had braids, had, you know, a few muscles then, because you know, I was working out in there.
Right.
So it was, you know, the reaction, the response to the females were different. You know, and Facebook was like a game changer.
Right.
So it was, yeah.
So did you have to learn about social media?
Yeah. I didn't. So look, I was so behind on technology and shit like that. I didn't get a, I got out May. I didn't get a smartphone until February or March the next year. Because I was like, it's too much for my brain.
Right.
Yeah, I had a flip phone.
You been probably missing out on a lot of music that done dropped.
A whole lot of music.
So y'all can't listen to music in there, or is it a certain type of music?
I say this. You can do whatever you can do in there if you make it happen.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, y'all know how to make it happen in there. Me doing music, most of my clientele are people that's in jail. And I really don't understand, like, how are y'all buying beats, bro? How y'all buying? Y'all spending more money than the people that's out here.
Yeah.
You know,
they probably
like,
making more money than a lot of niggas that's out here.
Right.
Yeah, like, it's, niggas is in there getting rich, man.
Right.
But they also getting addicted to that shit, too. And what they don't talk about is the overdose rate a week behind the walls.
Right.
Niggas is ODing, like, crazy. You know what I'm saying? 6, 7 to 10 ODs a week.
So with the job of being a certified peer recovery specialist in behavior health tech, what's your job? Like, what's your job description? Like, what do you do?
They call it, so it's not, I do case management work, but my thing is, how do we unpack trauma for one? This is on the CPRS side.
Right.
Unpacking that trauma, rebuilding or restructuring your life, however it look, because I'm not the one doing it. I'm the one that just asks the questions.
Right.
And tell you, like, this is a lot of, open-ended questions where you can't just tell me yes, no. No, like, you actually
you make
gonna
them think.
Intentionally give details on every answer, and I just write it down. I'm just the one to ask you the questions to build your recovery as a part of your treatment. So how is this going to look? And then, you know, I take them to the gym Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We go in there, work out. I work out with some of them. I play ball with the ones that want to play ball. Just being that support system. Again, just being that support in every angle, however I can.
So what are some issues that you see? I know you mentioned alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. What else?
Drugs. Yeah, so we deal with mental health, drugs, and alcohol. I'd be like, they in recovery for all of it.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I've been doing this about 3 years now. I know I've had at least 20 guys die overdosing. I can't even remember. Like, I don't even know all the clients that I've had because it's like a revolving door. And you see it so much. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, I might have some guys that come for a day and leave. When I come into work tomorrow, they be gone. Then I got some that'll see it through. Some will get halfway through. And then they feel like they at a point where they feeling better, where they don't need it no more, and they leave. And then they go back, relapse, and end up in a worse situation than they were before they even came the first time.
Right.
Then you got guys that's playing the treatment systems because they know they can get here for a few months, have a place to stay where you can sleep, you can eat, you know what I'm saying? But they're not taking it serious. You can tell the ones who are actually serious about it and the ones who just there because mama says you can't come back to the house until you get some help.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's... But I treat them all the same, though. As long as you here, like, I'm here for you. But I know if you bullshitting the system, that's on you. That's something you got to deal with. But my job and my obligation is to be here to help you in any way I can.
So how can our listeners contact you about the Sets Upon Reentry Program and the Dream Initiative?
All my contacts is what like Facebook and Instagram. That's the only two I got.
Okay, and can you tell the people where they can?
My bad.
Where they can find you?
Daniel Westbrooks on Facebook and Blueprint Number 2 Money on Instagram.
Right, and what upcoming projects do you have coming up that you're excited about?
Man, so look, my baby brother passed 3 years ago, completed suicide. He turned 35 two weeks ago on Tuesday. And so I started the Suicide Prevention and Awareness Walk in honor of him and a few other my friends and family members who, you know, took their life. And so from that, I've had so many people reach out about doing events and bringing mental health and suicide awareness to life and reality to our people. September the 7th or the 14th, I don't have all the details yet, but I got to meet with a couple people about putting the event on for that. I'm really just coming off of doing this last event, so I don't have anything that I'm actually working on myself at this time, but I told them I don't mind helping out with an event or collabing on something, but it take a lot out of you. So, like, I'm going to have to... I still ain't decompressed from that event, you know what I'm saying? Because you got to get back to life and working and taking care of kids. But shout out to my wife. Our 1 year anniversary is at the end of the month. We going to Vegas for about 3-4 days.
And like phones off.
Like, I don't even want to talk to my kids. Like, I don't talk to none of you niggas. We chilling. So, but September the 7th or the 14th, I know those would be one of the dates that something's going to actually happen.
Okay. So you say your brother passed from suicide.
Yeah.
How did that affect you?
So, like I said, I come from a supportive family.
Right.
So I saw the signs and we've done... I feel like we did everything that we could do to help him or get him help while he was alive.
So he was struggling with things.
Yeah, so... Right. What happened was, I mean, like I said, he played ball. He was in a real bad car accident in 2012. And we didn't know until he passed that he had CTE.
What's
on
that?
On his brain. It's like, if you drop, like, water, drop your, spill water in your iPad or drop it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can get it fixed, but you still going to see the tweaks inside your computer. So it's like a tweak in your brain. And they can't discover it until you pass away. Because they have to evaluate your brain. And the only way to do that, you can't be alive. And so CTE, and I wish I could tell you what it means if I wasn't talking right now. Like, you asked if I didn't bring this up. But it's basically like a brain malfunction. And it comes from trauma to the brain. So you see, like, a lot of people from in the army or their boxes or plays football, they say they have CTE because of a lot of head-on collisions or punches to the head, stuff like that.
Right.
And it develops, like, you could fall, hit your head right now on this table and develop CTE. And it'll tweak your whole system. So one day you're going to look like how you look right now. And then one day you might look like somebody else that you don't even know. Like, if I show you pictures, four or five different pictures
of him,
of my little brother, you'd be like, damn, he looked different here than on this one and that one right there. And so, like, knowing what he was going through and finding out this information after he's passed is giving me a purpose, because I like to find reasoning on why things happen. And like, I hurt every day. Like, don't get it twisted. But I know I could do more help than hurt people if I figure out how to help people that's going through some of the same situations.
Right.
So it does my heart good helping somebody, or knowing that like we all struggling with something, that I can put on an event for this right here, because a lot of people shy away from it. Like, it's talked about a lot, but how many times do people say, hey, look, let's don't go out tonight. Let's just circle up and talk about what we're going through.
Right.
And figure out some solutions of what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Because your personal take on my situation might be different from the other 4 or 5 people, but you don't know. I need everybody as a group, as a collective. I need y'all perspective on this right here to help me out. And we here to help you too. You know what I'm saying? Like, we be each other crutches to hold each other up and hold each other down and accountable, but we definitely need that type of support. You know what I'm saying? So, and I understand that people didn't get the type of love or support that I was blessed to get throughout my life. And so that's what I try to
give
to the universe. Like, that's my major contribution to the universe is love and support and help in any kind of way.
Right. Because if you be intentional, like, you get what you give.
Yeah. And like, I don't do it looking for no help in return. Right. Like, everything I do is usually free.
You know what I'm saying? It's gonna come back.
There's come, like, they were like, well, how much? And like, I don't want nothing, because health is free. You know what I'm saying?
Right. If
I could, like, help is free.
Right. It can be some simple as supporting, a like, a share. All that is free.
Everything. Speaking. You know what I'm saying? It's just support. How can you help somebody out? Now, if you got some money to help somebody, you know, do that too. Like, because I don't mind doing it if I know you really need it.
Right.
But the thing I tell my clients too, don't be afraid to ask for help. Like, you can't have too much pride that you rather suffer in silence, however it be. It could be mentally, financially, however it is. Like, don't be too prideful. Don't take advantage of good people either, though.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm here to be used, not misused.
Right.
So, however you can use me, utilize me, I'm a resource. You know what I'm saying? Use the resource.
And it's a lot of resources. Speaking on resources, what's some resources that you can give to the people out here that's going through, you know, abuse, going through mental health issues? Like, what's some of the resources that you can share?
There's different hotlines. I got a brain for it when it comes to this, because I just met some great people at the walk. And my friend Mont took his life on my birthday this year. And his wife played a major part in getting all the vendors from the Suicide Coalition to come out. Mm-hmm. And so I met him, but like, far as to be able to direct you to them right now, I can't even think like off the top of my brain.
Whenever you get them, definitely send them, because
I can definitely get a list and some numbers for sure.
So, Daniel, as we wrap up, what's some messages or thoughts that you would like to share with anyone who's going to be watching?
First, don't drink a long ass. Use a long ass straw for a cup of water.
Look, I haven't touched my water the whole fucking interview.
Oh, one thing I love to tell people, like, be yourself, man. Like, God created only one of you. I know, like, with social media, Instagram, and stuff like that, like, we can tend to look at other people's lives and put our face or our feet in their shoes, right?
Right.
Like, be yourself, man. God gave everybody one thing that separates you from everybody else. Like, tap into that one thing and be yourself. Like,
right.
In a world full of nobodies and people that want to be like everybody else, like, be you, man. Like, it's free.
Right.
To be yourself. It costs trying to be like everybody else.
Or
keep up with the Joneses, or, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Act like you this and that, and like, it's just
when, like, it's just so simple.
The people who for you are gonna be there for you. The people who not meant for you,
they weren't supposed to be there.
They not gonna be there. If they can't accept you for who you are, they don't need to be around you. Period.
Right. I feel like I needed to hear that. Yeah, so I know, man, a lot of people need to hear that. So that'll do it, you guys. I'm so excited about this episode. I feel like I learned a lot. Like, I'm taking things in. It's a learning opportunity for me.
Man, I appreciate you for having me.
For sure, for sure.
Can I add on to the last thing? It's only going to take 30 seconds, bro. Like, coronavirus killed a lot of people, but it it birthed something in me with the NBA because I love basketball. When they created that bubble, and only qualified people can step into this bubble, create a bubble in your life, man. And if they're not qualified to enter your bubble, don't allow them entrance.
COVID was That shit wasn't real. That shit was man-made.
Something.
It killed my granddaddy, man. They trying to increase the population.
Yeah.
So.
Well, man. Be yourself. You know, create your bubble.
That'll do it, you guys. I appreciate everybody tuning in, watching. I'm excited for this episode to drop, the second episode of Talks With Two. And we out. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Everything you had to go through, it started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.